Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. Thank you for making us your first listen, as we're available on all free podcasting platforms. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on a special Saturday edition of Locked On MLB, being dropped on the 23rd day of October 2021. We take a quick break from the League Championship Series excitement to talk about the excitement of front office baseball, specifically with the New York Yankees, where I'm bringing in my dear friend and Subway Squawker co-creator Lisa Swan to talk about the fact that Brian Cashman has signed the same contract that the Pope has signed. This show is available on all the free apps for your podcast. This is an audio only one, but we have our YouTube channel where many of our video podcasts take place. And you can follow us on Twitter at Lockdown MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. If you have a smart device, be sure to tell it to play Podcast Lockdown MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Lockdown Podcast Network, including Lockdown Astros with H-Town Wheelhouse and Eric Heisman, who must be absolutely thrilled that they're back in the World Series, just like everyone in baseball is happy to see the Astros in the World Series. And I know one person who's thrilled to see the Astros in the World Series, and that is one of my oldest friends in the world of baseball media, I suppose. We've known each other over a decade. Can you believe that? And we met, I think, before I was even doing podcasting, just as a mutual admiration society. She enjoyed Sully Baseball. I enjoyed Subway Squawkers. We've actually met in real life, so we're not just people who live in the Matrix. It's from the Sully Baseball Daily Podcast, my most frequent guest, and it's been too long since you've been on this podcast. Welcome back, Lisa Swan. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Sully. Just hanging in there, getting ready for, wait a minute. I don't have any baseball to watch. Oh, sorry.
Oh, well, come on. Dodgers and Braves are on tonight. And then you have the Astros. I know you are one of the true diehard Yankee fans that I've known over the years. And I'm not going to get into it much, but when the Red Sox were playing the Astros in the American League Championship Series, did you watch or did you just hold your nose and do other things? Did you take that as a time to catch up on your other shows, do some reading, maybe find God? I mean, I don't know what you did during the ALCS, or did you watch it?
I watched a little bit of it, and it just the thing is like, and you will. What I wanted, people would ask, well, who would you root for? And people reminded me that it was like 2009 for Mets fans and Phillies when the Yankees were playing the Phillies in the World Series. Who do you root for? Like, people used to say, like, you know, the sweet meteor of death for that. But this, I wanted whatever embarrassed the Yankee franchise the most. And so, I mean, I guess you could go either way on that. If the Red Sox had won, it would have been embarrassing. But then they'd say, well, see, the postseason's a crapshoot. And yeah. And then with the Astros, a third time in 5 years, and if the Dodgers manage to pull it out, then you can't really say it's a crapshoot.
Yeah. So, you made an interesting point in one of your Subway Squawker posts that you made the point that it may have been better for the Yankees to not even make it to the wild card.
Yes.
And when you think about that, tremendous effort was made to be the road team and lose one game at Fenway. That was the fruits of their labor. And you explain why you think that, or why you wrote that, that why even missing the playoffs at all would have been embarrassing for the short term, but may have been better off for the long term.
Because we don't have a media that ever calls them on it. All they always say, see, we made the playoffs every year. And look at this, Aaron Boone, the 4 years in a row with the playoffs and this many wins regular season. And never mind that there's, it's not just a wild card, there's two wild cards. And if you look back in the 80s, I looked at one point that for sure the Yankees would have made the, this was like maybe 10 years ago I checked on this, and the Yankees would have made the playoffs at least one time in the 80s that they didn't. Now with two wild cards, I think they would have made it three or four times. So they, you can't, what I'm getting at is that they always bring up the past. Oh, see, well, you know, those times they didn't make the playoffs these many years, and they're making the playoffs every year. So, but anyhow, when you have 92 wins, they're able to say, oh, see, we made it to the playoffs. Well, you have one game play in that you got your butts kicked. And I do think that if they had lost it, it would have been like, you were expected to go to the World Series this year. Why didn't you even make it the playoffs? So it would have been, I mean, as it is, I think a third place, technically third place, second wild card is not anything to write home about. If it had been fourth place, maybe it would have been some change, but who knows?
Yeah.
Because it would have been much, much harder to bring back Aaron Boone if they had not made the playoffs.
Well, and that goes to a point. I want to make two points, major points in this particular episode of Locked On MLB, which is that there is a point about the short term, and then I think there's a larger picture about the Yankee infrastructure that is going to be changed and or needs to be changed, and does not appear that it's even being considered to be changed. And I want everyone listening to this to know that I'm not saying this as a person who was born in New England and grew up in the suburbs of Boston and as seen on HBO rooting for the Red Sox. This is, I'm just putting on my baseball hat here, not any fandom, not any anti-Yankeedom, because some of the things I'm going to be saying are ways I think the Yankees could improve. And I think you and I agree on a lot of things. I see your posting, I see what you write. I agree with most of what you write. And where I agree with you on this is there is a sense of complacency that this is a job well done, that the Yankees of this year did their job. And you could make the argument that, like, hey, they gave their fans an entertaining summer. They're technically a playoff team. And, you know, what else can you do other than that? And you could put together a better team is what you can do after that. And you could have a sense of urgency with the ball club, because, you know, when you take a look at the last, you know, they went through the entire 2010s without appearing in a World Series and missing the playoffs for a couple of years. They missed the playoffs 3 out of 4 years at one stretch. And when you look at what the Red Sox have done, I'm just going to use the Red Sox because, you know, the two of them were so linked in the 2000s, obviously linked through history. The fact that the Red Sox have won the World Series twice in the 2010s and got to the sixth game of the ALCS this last year. And two of those years were rebuilding years. Those are years where they didn't have high expectations. And they also had a couple of years where they were bad. And, you know, they had a couple of last place finishes in the 2010s, and they had moments where they retooled. And I keep hearing that Yankee fans would not accept the rebuild. I don't know how true that is. I honestly don't know how true that is. Would they rather have a season where, and I'm asking you this, would you rather have a season where, okay, you win 78 games, but you have 5 or 6 young players that you can point to saying, oh, all right, this isn't great, but look at, we're building something right here, as opposed to winning 90 games and having a team that you know is going to limp through the playoffs, if they even make it.
Yeah, I think that's what they really put kind of like when they forced A-Rod to retire in, what was it, August 2016, and really kind of put a punctuation on it, that the next day when they brought up, it was Aaron Judge and Tyler Austin having back-to-back homers, their very first at-bats, right after each other, and that was like super exciting, and obviously Judge has become a superstar after this. So, mm-hmm. But in 2017, if they had not made the playoffs, I don't think fans would have felt like, oh, this is terrible. It was just really kind of a bonus. It was like, wow, they're making the playoffs, and they got so close to the World Series and all. But so, yeah, I put this argument to Yankee fans on this of what would you prefer? And the fact the Red Sox this year were, this was kind of like, wasn't this a rebuilding year?
Oh, yeah. This was, Gabrielle from Girl at the Game, who's a diehard Red Sox fan and podcaster, made a absolutely bold out there prediction that they would win in the low 80s and be kind of good. And that was looked upon as, oh man, well, let's not get carried away here. Low 80s, really? I thought this was a high 70s team. And I don't mean like getting high with the Eagles. I mean the high, like 70. I thought they were 77, 78 win team. And the fact that they were in first place for a chunk of the year was weird to me. I actually picked the Yankees to win the division this year, not because I thought they were necessarily a great team. I just thought the Rays took, I didn't think the Rays were going to bounce back. I thought losing Morton and Snell, I thought they lost too much of their pitching depth. I thought the Blue Jays were a year away. I thought the Orioles were going to be terrible. I thought the Red Sox were in a mid rebuild. So I just thought just by process of elimination, I thought the Yankees were going to win about 90 to 92 wins. That's what I thought they were going to be and win the division. I did not see Tampa being a 100-win team. The Yankees were pretty much the team I thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I think I had higher expectations. And one of the things that I do take issue with what you said on enjoying watching them this year, I found, with the exception of maybe 3 weeks, when it was ironically when everybody got COVID and they brought up some young guys.
Allen,
and,
right? Wasn't the kid Allen they brought
in?
Yeah,
and they had a bunch of, you know, kind of names or whatever. But for about 3 weeks there, they had some great winning streaks, and it was watchable. Because most of the, even when they're winning, it's not fun baseball. It's not watchable baseball. I don't know how to explain it, what it is. I mean, the one game I saw in person was the Subway Series on the 4th of July, where both Cole and Chapman got booed off the mound by Yankee fans.
Yeah.
So that was, and they both stuck up the joy, and it just was like, what is this? This is horrible. And it's funny, I had taken a video of the, I didn't mean to do a video, I was just taking a bunch of pictures, but I got the audio on myself, and it's like, this is a disgrace of me at Yankee Stadium. So that was my that's what I'll think of this year, when it's, you know, it being a disgrace. But I go back to the whole wild card thing that they keep on harping on, the making the playoffs, when they've made the, you can't say it's a crapshoot when you've won the division once in 9 years.
Okay. All right. I want to get to this in a second here. Okay. Cause there's two major faces we're going to have to bring in here. First of all, the big news that came about the last week was the rehiring of Aaron Boone. And I think I don't think Aaron Boone is the problem. I think that bringing him back is a symbolic gesture in a way to say, we're fine with what happened this year. This is the status quo works for us. And we're not going to throw Boone to the wolves. I don't know what Aaron Boone brings to the table as a manager, positive or negative. He doesn't appear to have any control over the lineup, the roster construction, and now even his coaching staff. And I thought, you know, kind of like what happened with Showalter when they started firing his coaches, he said, well, I'm not coming back. And that's why he wasn't fired by George. He left when they kept firing his coaches. Well, you're going to have a completely emasculated Aaron Boone who it doesn't have any, you know, we keep hearing how he doesn't have any real power on the team. Aren't you better off getting someone who at least, even if they have no power, it at least is someone who has the illusion of power? It's kind of like when after the Civil War, the Republican Party kept running generals from the Civil War, even though some of them had no political experience, but it just looked good to have a general in the White House. And, you know, his staff in the Senate really ran things. You're almost better off saying, okay, is there a like someone who reminds everyone of the glory days. Like I'm just going to throw out, like, you know, Tino Martinez. Tino Martinez is now the manager. Oh my God, it's Tino. And Tino is just told what to do, and everyone just feels good that they see Tino. I mean, aren't they better off at least doing that to create the illusion that things are going to be different?
Yeah, in some ways, yes. But I think, yeah, it's Aaron Boone is a puppet. We all know it.
Yeah.
But the one thing that he was supposed to bring to the table was, and I think Cashman thought this was going to be like 96, where they 78, where you have like the manager has kind of lost the clubhouse and he's just too intense. So I know that that's not really the Showalter thing, but certainly wasn't Billy Martin.
Yeah. Joe Girardi. Yeah, you're right. Girardi. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's certainly, I mean, Girardi was there too long. They should have let him go years ago. But the thing is with Boone, the one thing he was supposed to bring was, well, he's young and he can relate to the young guys and he can, you know, he'll be good with the players. And who has improved under him? Who do you feel that I feel like he goes so far ahead? Like, it's always like mañana. Okay, everything's great. Well, you know, tomorrow we'll get him and all. And it's just like, there's never any honesty. There's never any, you know, this really stunk. He never calls anybody out. And ironically, Gary Sanchez, one of the reasons that they got rid of Girardi was they felt he couldn't relate to Gary Sanchez. Has Gary Sanchez gotten better?
Oh, he's a DFA candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, who is it you said about with what does he bring to the table? It's like, what is there that I could say that he improved? And I can't think of a thing.
No.
Nothing. And it's like, there's certain guys, like, and this is a football guy, but Herm Edwards, I don't know, he wasn't a great Jets coach, but he was memorable, and he always, I'd listen to him, and I'd be pumped up, and I'm not even a Jets fan. He was at least entertaining, and he was motivational. Boone is just like, I've always had a problem with the way that he started anyway. It's just the whole idea of, I think about these coaches, I think about these guys like Joe Maddon, how many years in the minor leagues coaching, doing all this stuff, or how many of these stories, and people work for decades to get the chance to be a manager. And here he is, well, he's a pretty face and he's on Sunday Night Baseball and Brian Cashman contacts him and basically calls him in for the job, and whatever it was, some great interview of like the, you know, lit up the room as much as, you know, Art Howe did back in the day with the Mets. I don't know what was said in that meeting, but you know that, but that's what he got the job, and never a minute of coaching.
Yeah,
I just have a problem with that.
That always disturbs me when they bring in someone. You and I are completely in agreement. Not even someone like, you know, I mean, sometimes they'll bring in someone who's like from the front office with no, but I really feel that you need to have at least some experience coaching or managing at some level before they give you the car keys to the Yankees.
I mean, not just any franchise, but the Yankees, the marquee job in baseball.
I mean, you've had a lot of times where you've had some successful managers in Yankee history who managed elsewhere beforehand and cut. I mean, Casey Stengel famously was the manager of, you know, the Braves and Brooklyn before coming over. You know, Billy Martin managed three or four teams before coming over. Joe McCarthy, who managed arguably the greatest Yankee teams of the 30s and early 40s, was the Cubs manager beforehand. I mean, excuse me, you know, Torrey managed the Mets, the Braves, and the Cardinals. It's like you should have. And I think there's something to be said about bringing in a manager who has already managed before, who has already made some of the rookie mistakes before, and just knows the day in and day out activities of running a team, dealing with all the elements. Even if it is someone who is going to be a puppet, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are managing in Scranton or at Spokane or whatever, who would love to be a major league manager and say, here's your lineup and everything. You're going to do this. Fine. Because there's more to managing than that. I think we're seeing that with Dusty Baker in Houston right now, that his job was to be a firewall to all of the scrutiny, the, you know, the justifiable scrutiny, but to be, to sort of block the team from it and be the face in front of it. And, you know, and I'm sure there's lots of lineup stuff and stuff which has nothing to do with Dusty. It's his job to do that. And I just, the idea that they're giving that job, you know, Girardi managed in Miami before managing the Yankees. It's like, it is always considered to be a premier job. And at least, you know, Stump Merrill and Buck Showalter had minor league managing experience and coaching experience. It just, it defies all logic. And that he showed nothing. Look, every time I hear anyone talk about it, they talk about what a nice guy Aaron Boone is. You know, like, I'm never going to hang out with Aaron Boone. My friend Scott's the nicest guy you'll ever meet in the world. Sweetest, nicest, smartest guy in the world. I don't want him managing my team. What has nice been the prerequisite?
Yeah, and I think at this point, I Gary Sanchez needs a nice manager. These guys, it's like we've seen sloppy play all year, and this has been going on for a while. And it's basically, I mean, Boone's first 2 years, okay, they won 98 games or whatever. The last two seasons, and I know, well, you know, last year there's a COVID, but still, it was a very mediocre year last year. They made it to the playoffs because everybody made it to the playoffs. But I think the fan base was just like, enough with Boone. Let's have somebody else. And so for to not just bring him back, when I don't know if you saw the on Twitter when it was amazing ratio when they announced that Boone was coming back, because if they had said 1 year, I wouldn't have been crazy about it. But I figure, okay, Cashman's got one more year, and they're giving him one more year to get this together. But to go three with an option of four, it's like, who's asking for this? And it was just such a, you know, I don't want to curse, but you get my point. It was just so sticking it to the fans. It's like, can you throw us a bone here? Can you give us something? I mean, I know Cashman he's like a member of the family. Well, he's not a Steinbrenner. And no. Even if he was, people, you know, even in family businesses, people get fired occasionally. Yeah. And the whole stuff of it's just the glory days at all. And the thing is that the media, nobody wants to call out what the reality is that Hal doesn't care about baseball. He doesn't know about baseball. So, and he doesn't want anybody to ever call him like his father. So he does the opposite. So it's just like, well, I'm going to keep these guys on forever. And no one even calls on the media. Where's Hal? He's given he's the one media appearance in the past year, never spoke at the end of the season. Oh yeah, but he really cares about winning. Can you give an interview? Can you go on the Michael Kay show? Come on.
I want to go to the main point here, and this is something that you and I have been talking about for a while, and that is everything goes back to Cashman. Everything. It goes back, you know, Boone is a puppet to Cashman. Okay, there's the analytics department. Everyone can hide behind, well, this is what the data tells us, which I think is somewhat disingenuous, because analytics, there's no like one analytics. Analytics just means you're analyzing data and coming up with conclusions based upon that data. It's not like the back of the teacher's handbook where it has the answers. And whoever's doing the Yankee data is not doing a very good job. And you see other teams like, I'll say it, San Francisco and Tampa Bay. San Francisco won 107 games with a mediocre team. If you take a look at the squad, 107 ball games. Now, they lost a razor-thin series to Los Angeles, but they won 107 games with Kevin Gausman as your ace. This is what it was. This is not Lincecum, Baumgartner, Kane anymore. And so someone's doing a better job at crunching the numbers. But saying analytics seems to be another veil for Cashman to hide behind. Well, it's not. It's the analytics. It's this. It's Cashman's hiring the analytics people. It always comes back to him. And I want to just say a couple things right now, and I want to get your take on this. Cashman has been, you know, this is what I call Bob Costas syndrome. in that because we met Cashman when he was young, our images of him are still that he's a young guy. He's not. He's been he's had this job since 1998. Okay. This is a long time. That's the Lewinsky scandal. I mean, it's been a long time. Titanic was in theaters when he got this gig. And that's too long for anyone to have a job like this, because think about baseball thinking in 1998, the year of the Sosa McGuire chase. You know, Roger Maris was the home run king when he took over. Okay. Think about how our thinking of baseball has changed. Just the mentality of putting together a team. Having a job as that damn long is borderline irresponsible, especially when the game is evolving. And when people say, oh, but he's won 4 rings as a general manager. All right, I want to address that. His first 3 rings were won with a team that was set up by Stick Michael and Showalter, and perfected under Watson and Torrey. He took over that team, did everything he needed to. I'm not going to take that away from him, but I'm not going to let him do victory laps now because he inherited a team that was already an elite team. And you and I also know that he had a power struggle until, what was it, 2005, 2006, with yes. The Randy Levines and everyone. And so I think it was after either the series against the Angels or against the Tigers in 06. I don't remember which one it was. But at that moment, he took over control of the team. And I really think you could start judging his tenure as general manager at the end of the 2012 playoffs when Jeter broke his ankle, because that was the last time you had a playoff team with any of the supposed core. And now it's all Cashman's team. And since then, which is a 9-year sample size, longer than 2 presidential terms, he's won the division once. He's been the best team in the division once and made 0 World Series appearances. Under his watch, Judge has been developed. Where's the core that's been developed there? The Blue Jays have built 2 cores since then. The Red Sox have built 2 cores since then. I mean, I don't understand why he isn't being scrutinized, that he's been there for over 20 years. And once you take away all of the one championship where he was the GM, was either they open up their wallet and brought in Sabathia and Teixeira and Burnett. And they still had Matsui and all the other stars on the team and A-Rod. So the team that's really Cashman's is starting in 2013. And where is his core that he's developed? Where's his Judge? It's Judge. You know, Severino didn't work out. Bird didn't work out. Sanchez didn't work out. And so I don't understand why he isn't taken to task, because he's still doing victory laps for 2009.
Yeah, I would give him, I would say, I'll give him all the credit for, you know, because certainly 2000, he did a lot to retool the team when, you know, it was kind of towards the end of the dynasty, bringing in David Justice. I'll give him credit for that. But he's got to get the blame for all these other stupid decisions over the years. And I get that, Hal doesn't want that. I want the Yankees to be like the Dodgers, where they blow everybody out of the water spending. Mm-hmm. That would be the ideal. But the ideal is also to have an Andrew Friedman type as a GM, and you know, instead of dumpster diver Cashman. And it just is stuff of like, I mean, I saw something that Joel Sherman was talking today. Oh well, they could go after Verlander. Well, the time to go after Verlander was
2017.
Yeah. Not now. I don't want 39 years of, off Tommy John surgery. No. And enough of this. It's like I was trying to figure out today, like, okay, so who the Yankees signed like the last decade? Big signings. Okay, we got Cole. Mm-hmm. All right, who else? Oh, I forgot. Ellsbury.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Ellsbury. So that was the thing. But that was, I contend that if they had, and I know Cano, the steroids and everything else, but I contend if they had re-signed Cano, they would have won another ring. How much money would that have been worth? And that's something else, just like for only obsession of money that Hal has, and you know, they, you know, you always hear that, well, they want them, they, I mean, the ticket prices, everything else. It's like, does it ever occur to them that, you know, they won another World Series, how much more tickets they could sell and money could be spent and everything else? I was looking at the, and I know obviously there's COVID involved with the attendance, but I was crunching the numbers of what the attendance was for the Yankees this year versus last year. And they were eighth in the league, or eighth in the majors this year, which they haven't been that in a while. And they were drawing like under, you know, like 31,000 a game. That's after, you know, like I figured out that was like from June on, because they dropped the COVID restrictions May 15th. But that's not great.
I've got the sense from a lot of the Yankee fans that I've talked with over this year that this wasn't considered to be a very fun year.
No.
This was considered to be, there were a lot of blown saves. There was a lot of frustration. There was a sense of complacency. There was a sense of stagnancy. And even the way they you mentioned the point where they brought in some of the young kids, like Allen, who gave him a little spark. Isn't it amazing that people woke up when people were going first to third and stealing bases? Like, that's actually fun to watch baseball where there's action on the field. But also when they went on the winning streak, after losing the Field of Dreams game, they went on the big long winning streak, and it looked, you know, things looked like, oh, now the team is clicking. That really seemed like the only two times where Yankee fans were having any fun for this year. And it's, I'm going to bring another thing up with Cashman, because, you know, when you put together a team that is, everyone sees the team was not put together well. When you go into a season where you saw four of your five starting pitchers combine for one inning in the last year, you can't walk around stunned that the starting pitching staff got injured. You know, you can't walk around stunned that the bullpen got taxed. And they wound up finding, you know, they find the Cortezes of the world and the Montgomerys of the world to sort of, you know, be kind of the equivalent of Sean Chacon and Aaron Small in 2005, when they filled in the cracks there, when I guess it was Brown and Pavana were hurt anyway. But, you know, and the Qingming Wang will show, the Qingming Wangs of the world will show up once in a while. But you put together a team, you assemble a team that's unathletic, way too right-handed, strikes out way too much, and whose starting pitching staff is injured, you can't walk around stunned, you know, that, oh my God, we got so many injuries to our pitching staff. Well, no kidding. And
yeah,
and it,
yeah,
and it boils back down to the person putting the team together.
Yeah, and the whole idea of with the analytics, I mean, when you come down to it, batting average is part of analytics, all these things, and really analyzing personalities is part of, you know, you could consider that analytics of, is this a good mesh? Will this work together? But it's just like, there's so many, you know, Hal does not want to do any dirty work. He doesn't want to have to ever talk. And he's just happy to, oh, well, you know, Cashman looks like he still knows what he's doing. And also the media pulls their punches because they need access. I don't know how much you follow with the New York media, but one thing I noticed is the only people who are willing to call out Cashman are the Lupicas of the world, Bob Clappich, Bill Madden, because they've been around there forever and they're columnists and they don't really need the access anymore the way that they are. I mean, they've been doing it like 15.
Yeah.
I mean, literally reading those guys like my, you know, since I got into baseball. So they're not worried about if I say anything about Cashman, he'll cut me off. But most of these other columnists or beat writers are. So, and what infuriates me is, you know, in 10 years, they'll all write their books, the ones who are saying how great Cashman is now. And then they'll say, yeah, they was terrible or whatever. And it's like, well, why don't you say it now? So,
yeah. Well, I have baseballreference.com, the greatest single website in the history of the planet Earth. And since they changed their name from the Highlanders to the Yankees, in 1913, only two managers have managed the Yankees four consecutive years without winning a pennant. and they are Buck Showalter and Aaron Boone. And you have to put an asterisk next to Showalter because in 1994, look at, I don't know if they would have won the pennant because lest we forget the Chicago White Sox were also really, really good that year. But they looked like, I mean, they were on pace to win 100 games and win the division and who knows what. And of course, they were a one inning away from, they were three outs away from advancing in 1995. But Showalter, I think, you know, Showalter inherited a 90 loss team and turned them into contenders. Boone inherited a team that made it to the ALCS and has turned them into a team that lost the wild card game on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the things that killed me with the press release where they were, was this, and I could talked about how with Steinbrenner, you know, he used to have the missives that Howard Rubenstein would write for him of, you know, like the boss sounding tough or whatever. But the quotes that Hal had about the intelligence and baseball acumen of Aaron Boone, it's like, who are we kidding here?
No.
That ain't it, Chief. But
no.
The other thing that got me was that nobody called them out on Matheny, that the comparison of, oh, well, only Mike Matheny had the first 4 years with the Cardinals of this sort of record of making the playoffs each year. Yeah, and they not only did Matheny get to a World Series, and that was a team that had, you know, I guess it was after La Russa retired.
He inherited a World Series champion.
Yes. So he inherited a champion. And so if you look at it that way, they went to one other World Series. They didn't win anything. They gave him a contract extension and then they fired him like a year and a half after the contract extension and, you know, fired him early. So it's like he never, after the first 4 years, sniffed the playoffs again.
Yeah.
So that's Is that what we have to look forward to?
And I'll tell you the other thing. Last thing I wanted to say is that it drives me crazy when you say that, well, maybe they should get rid of Boone. And the response is always, well, who are you going to replace him with? As if Boone is the only option. Now, my first answer is anybody with managerial experience. My real option is to say, why not Hensley Mullins? Why don't you take someone who, or Hensley Mullins or Roberto Kelly or Ron Wotus, the three-headed monster of these people who are lieutenants under Bruce Bochy, being trusted coaches on a staff that won multiple World Series games. But I point to Mullins because he has, you know, obviously tremendous coaching background with Bochy's championship Giants. He was a member of the Yankees organization, came up obviously as Bam Bam, the prospect, speaks like three or four different languages and would be relatable to the press and to the fan base and everything. Roberto Kelly is another one, former Yankee All-Star, was a member of Bruce Bochy's coaching staff. Wouldn't you want to pick the carcass of one of the most successful coaching staffs of the last decade? You know, the team that did win multiple World Series in the 2010s. But the mentality of, if you don't have a perfect candidate lined up to replace them, then you shouldn't talk about firing them. That's like saying if you have a dolphin trainer and the dolphin trainer keeps forgetting to put the dolphin in the water and you keep coming out and say, well, the dolphin, you forgot to put the dolphin in the water. Oh yeah, I keep forgetting that. You say, yo, we got to fire that guy. He keeps forgetting to put the dolphin in the water. And I said, well, do you know someone else? Well, I know someone knows how to put the dolphin in. Well, until you tell me who, we have to keep using this guy. This is why you have interim managers and interim GMs. Those exist. When Dan Duquette got fired from the Red Sox, there was an interim GM. There was an interim manager. That happens for other teams where the general manager doesn't sign the same contract that the Pope or a Supreme Court justice signs.
Well, even I would say that Cashman's contract's longer because, you know, didn't Pope Benedict, he stepped down?
And, yeah, he did.
And we had Suter step down, but Cashman is just like for life. We're stuck with this guy. And it doesn't, it's like results don't even matter anymore. And I just get so tired of, that's why I didn't want the Yankees to make the playoffs, because they give the whole crapshoot nonsense. And you can't say when teams would, if you make it the World Series 3 out of the last 5 years with the Astros, and if the Dodgers make it, what would that be, 3 out of the last 4, or what's with that?
It would be Four of the last five.
You can't say that's a crapshoot. That's, you know, that's the cream rising to the top. And it's this nonsense that they're just so hung up on that. And I, no one ever asked on the flip side, if it's a crapshoot, it's just luck. What are you celebrating the 27 rings for? Because, you know, I guess they just got lucky and you know, people, and I always hear, you know, people who hate the Yankees are like, well, you're celebrating rings you weren't alive for. And that's true. But that's the flip side of that is like, when I get called, oh, you're a spoiled Yankee fan. It's like, well, which is it? If you figure out that there's 15 teams in the AL and the Yankees have made the World Series once in the last 18 years, that ain't good.
No. And I guess that's the point you're making is that they have not been, when they're saying that the other teams have caught up with them. I said, well, they caught up with them a while ago. You know, the Royals have won multiple World Series and made it to multiple World Series and won one since their last Yankee pennant. The Royals. You know,
yes, that's right. They've been twice to the World Series.
Yeah. And they, yeah. In fact, if Salvador Perez had driven home the runs in the bottom of the ninth of Game 7, the Royals would have a chance to win back-to-back World Series. But they were a swing away from winning one, and then they won the next year against the Mets, lest we forget, have been in a World Series more recently than the Yankees.
Yes, but it is totally forgotten, though, even by Mets fans. But
yeah.
I think more than anything else, besides the losing and this idea of this one, I never wanted Mattingly as a Yankee manager because I figured, well, they're never going to be able to fire him because of Mattingly. And the same with Jeter, I would never have wanted him because of that. But it's like, when did Boone become, because of one home run where they didn't even win the World Series, that he's just untouchable?
Well, my statement on that is if the criteria the Yankees had to hire a manager was to hire someone who hit a walk-off home run in the deciding game of the American League Championship Series, why not hire the one with decades of managerial experience? That is Chris Chambliss.
Yeah, you remember that he was a Yankee hitting coach, and I think Jeter didn't like him or something. They basically got kind of pushed out, and that was the end with him.
Jeter owns the Marlins. Yeah. Why are they so beholden to Jeter right now?
Well, that's true. That's true. I guess he said that he must be in his 70s now. So.
Well, then say this to Chris Chambliss. Chris, we're not asking you to do much. Show up in your Yankee uniform. The old school Yankee fans would love it because you're a throwback to those years. You connect to the Bronx Zoo and the Joe Torre years as a coach. You don't have to do anything. We'll hand you the lineup card. We'll hand you this. The fans will love you because they look at you as an old school grizzled guy. You just got to sit there, nod, stand on the front step and do the lineup we tell you to do. And Chris Chambliss would love it.
Yeah, that's a, you know, it couldn't be any worse than Boone, that's for sure.
All right,
but,
well,
I'm sure Boone, like you said, it's they always say nice guy. Well, yeah, well, who cares?
Yeah, I'm not going to hang out with him.
Yeah.
Well, I have hung out with you, and yes. You are the co-creator of Subway Squawkers, and where can people find all your great stuff?
SubwaySquawkers.com. And if they're running fans, I'll be running the New York City Marathon in 2 weeks. So that's my non-baseball excitement.
Well, congratulations on going back to the marathon. When I first met you, you were not a marathon runner, and now you are an avid runner. So there you go. I'm thrilled for you. I'm going to be cheering you on virtually. I won't be there. Forgive me. But Lisa Swan, I knew you and I would be able to talk. Probably we'd be able to talk for hours on this particular topic because we have eerily similar thoughts on the subject. But hey, thanks so much for being part of the show. Everyone else, you can follow us at Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Thanks for making Locked On MLB your first listen. We're available on all the free platforms. This has been Locked On MLB, emergency edition, squeezing in between the League Championship Series games on the 23rd of October, 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.